and questions around policy. And what I would like to do, Chair, with your permission, is first to give DG October an opportunity to answer some of the questions of a more detailed nature involving funding, institutions, those kind of matters, where as accounting officer you would be the expert on the matter, then followed by DG Tom. Dr. Tom could then deal with the same kind of questions that may be directed to the EDD annual performance plan. I'm going to then also ask whether Deputy Minister Gina would like to say anything on the questions, and then I would thereafter deal with some of the policy issues that emanate from the questions that has been put here. If you're happy with that, Chair?
That's in order. Thank you, Minister.
Thanks, Minister. I think let me try to go through them as quickly as we can. I think just on the question of the budget, from Honourable Montashe, yes, I see you've gone into quite detail with our budget. The first one is the Invest SA budget. And actually you will see there that it looks like a decline, but actually if you just look at it, it's actually a slight increase. The original allocated budget to this program in 2018-19 was 53.8 million. But during the adjustment estimate, we received an extra 30 million, and that was to, as you know, we're rolling out. We've got ones in Gauteng, KZN, Western Cape. So they were given additional money for Eastern Cape, Free State, and Mpumalanga. And then the new budget is 58 million, which is actually an increase on the 53. But as I said, it looks like it's a decline because of that special allocation we did get for Invest SA. The second one relates to the BE Commission, and yes, the allocation there is 61.7 million. And because it is still under the department and it's not yet a listed entity, we believe this budget is sufficient, and also because we supply a lot of the back office support, admin support, and so on. So some of their costs are taken off. But as I said, there is the question of they want to have an independent listing, and then they'll have to build up their own machine. But for now, it is adequate. You ask about the National Consumer Regulator, and as I said, we at this stage there is no funding pressures. But when the new Credit Amendment Act was passed in Parliament, we did start making provision for they would need extra debt officers. And in that way, but as I said, that act has not been promulgated yet, and we will then make the necessary adjustment should that be the case. I think Honourable Montashe, but the broader point is correct. In general, the budget is constrained, and as I said, they are trying to maintain the debt ceiling, and there is pressure on our budgets. And as you know, every year there is those cuts. But as I said, we have to obviously work smarter with it. We have to allocate it more efficiently. But also what we're doing is we're sometimes keeping the spread, right? So, for example, in the film industry, we get many applications. We've sort of reduced the maximum amount you get so that we spread the more, so we still cover lots of. But it is a difficulty going forward. Honourable Tiering asked about, I think, two concerns about that. It's firstly about the Bureau of Standards. As he indicated, the bulk of our entities receive clean audits, and we have sort of two difficult ones still left. It's Bureau of Standards and National Regulator of Compulsory Specification. I must say with the National, with the NRCS, there is progress. As you know, we've put them on a very clear audit path, and their one is now just a technical adjustment for their revenue collection to be properly reflected and for a proper IT system to do in place. So we expect progress there. The one real one which is a real problem is the Bureau of Standards, and as was mentioned by Andrew McPherson, we did have to, because of the mismanagement of Bureau of Standards, we've placed it under administration. It's going very, they're in the second phase of, there's a clear turnaround strategy now. We've appointed three senior staff from DTI to act as administrators. They will be acting as until October. And then Minister will make a decision about then reconstituting the board. But I think there is progress there. But they got a disclaimer. And so, as I said, we will put in place a very clear plan to get them back to. As I said, we've got similar experience. As you know, Cipro and CIPC also received qualified audits, but we've put them under the clear program for turnaround, and for example, they've done quite well. I think if I go on to some of the questions relating to the Black Industrialist Program, again from, I think it's Honourable Tiering and Honourable Cuthbert, I think it's a question of the Black Industrialist Program. As you know, there's always difficulty because it's the business world is tough, and trading conditions are tough. So far, they're all still in business and growing. And what we've built into the system, our selection criteria was very rigorous. So we really upped the conditions for you to enter, viability test, inspections by both DTI, the IDC, NEF. We did lots of due diligence to see that we do cater for the needs. But we also have created a forum of the Black Industrialists where we interact with them regularly to monitor progress, to deal with difficulty. And as I mentioned, that is why we're shifting to interventions, because we need to ensure that they grow and we get early warning signals of problems and so on. But as I said, so far, the program is holding well together. I think the important question there from Andal Cuthbert, I think, is the ease of doing business. Mentioned that important. That is actually one of our big, big focus areas. That's why we created the one-stop shop and invest essay from 2014, 2015 onwards. As you know, the President outlined in his State of the Nation address, one past, is that we want to move from the 80s to in the top 50. We've got an active program with the World Bank to improve the ease of business. As you know, now with the companies, you can now register a company in a matter of minutes. But the big issue there is it is still not fully integrated with the UIF system, workmen's compensation. So that's the next phase we're working on now. It's a seamless process between SARS, UIF, Department of Labor, and the registration so that we reach those targets. But that is a top a priority for. I think that covers most of it from my side. Oh, on the suspensions, we're just getting all the names, but there's three persons that are suspended. As we've reported to Parliament before, we have adopted a policy of zero tolerance for any fraud and corruption, and we suspend people on the same day we hear of any misrepresentation. So that's why we've kept within the department, especially very, very close to zero. There's three persons. I think we will forward the details of the names to you, because there could just be some issues of. We just want to double check the names on that, because as I said, one is a case pending still in the court at the moment, but we will forward that details. Thank you.
Chairperson, with regard to Honourable Cuthbert question, the question, he makes a comment that says that he agrees that a department like Economic Development Department, it should coordinate efforts by stakeholders in the economy to create decent jobs. which is a point that I made in the visions of the department. However, he questions as to why we are providing reports and analysis, right? Particularly when you speak about the infrastructure development with regard to the SIPs. Recall that SIPs themselves, they are the huge investments on infrastructure in the country. Now, in the reports, they actually give the detail on the types of jobs that are created and the nature of those jobs that are created. And again, we talk about reports when we speak about the youth unemployment. Those reports, there are also reports that give details about the jobs created by the private sector and other social partners. Now, that is the response that I wanted to forward, that those reports, they are reporting what Honorable Cuthbert is actually says should be reported on. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I think, again, without going into details on the questions that were asked as the DGs has responded, basically, from the comments and the questions that have been raised, the main question is, how do we build, how are we going, or how are we planning to build a capable state, and what is it that we can do even differently to make sure that we achieve that? I think, Chairperson, we need to welcome even the support that says very soon as the department, we are going to be looking to our APPs review and see what is it that the two departments can come together, because I think basically that is exactly what is it, that's the intention even of doing that, is to say, how do we, Honorable, you said your surname is... It's difficult. String. Yes. Honorable String was even saying, not String, String, was saying, I'm sorry for that, was even saying, how are we going to make sure that we try by all means that we even include those who have been excluded from our economic activities as a country. And that is basically from the discussions that we have had at the level of the department, the things that are on the top of the agenda. How do we defend our industries? How do we make sure that we attract more investors to come so that we grow the economy? So I think those are the processes that we are busy with. And as the minister has said, very soon we'll be coming back to have open discussions with the members of the committee so that we can even get more ideas of how we move and grow our economy of the country. So with the questions, Chair, that have been raised, really, for me, there were even... there were more of proposals and even adding to the mission and the vision that we have as a department, as to say what is it that we need to see to make sure that our economy grow and it's very much inclusive as per the plan that we have. Thank you very much, Chair.
Chairperson and honourable members, thank you to the DGs, thank you to Deputy Minister. I think the issues raised by Honourable Mantash have been covered by the responses, and I appreciate the comments Honourable Mantash made around the reduction in the departments as an indication of the new way that government intends to work. Honourable Thring, thank you for the comments that you've made, and particularly the warm sentiments from you. There were a few areas that Honourable Thring raised that I thought at a more policy level we could perhaps just begin to signal the broader approach of government. The first was on the question of the Gini coefficient. Dealing with income inequality and broader inequality must be quite a key objective for what we do in the next number of years. Creating more jobs is one instrument to reduce inequality in a society. Ensuring reasonable standards for working people is another example of that. Fostering greater entrepreneurship, where more South Africans come in as small business owners and as people who build enterprises, is a further way to do so. And so we're going to be looking very concretely for practical things we can do that will help to change that needle. There is a role, obviously, in every society for social protection, grants and so on. But a long-term strategy against poverty and inequality must be a strategy that's based on job creation. That must be the fundamental pillar on which everything else rests. And so over the next period, we will focus more on that. And I will, from time to time, highlight in our policy announcements and so on the attention we're paying to this important issue. On broad-based black economic empowerment, Honorable Tring makes the point that in many instances, BBBEE has not been broad enough, or sometimes not broad at all. And as we engage with South Africans, go to townships, factories, villages, there is definitely a real sense that we need a rethink about how we implement our broad-based policies. There's a recognition that some of them have worked well, but there's also a recognition that in a number of cases, it has not given large numbers of South Africans the empowerment that we need as a society. So there's a few things we're doing. The first phase of BEE was one where the focus was principally on getting 5% or 8% or 10% or 15% of the shares in a company sold on some concessional basis to black South Africans. There was some value in it, but by its nature, it had two defects. It wasn't broad-based in many cases, and it didn't foster enough entrepreneurship. You were basically a passive shareholder in a company waiting for the dividend flow. So the first shift in government thinking, so it's the second phase of BEE, was to introduce the idea of a broad-based vehicle. And that broad-based vehicle focused on trying to make sure that vehicles have more women, more black South Africans, more young people, and so on it. I think it's been a mixed bag. I can point to quite interesting examples of success, and perhaps we should be, at one of the meetings of the committee, we should showcase both challenges but also successes. Because part of building the democracy is to celebrate, as a collective, the successes. All parties, every South African really can celebrate the success that happens inside the South African economy. And then we point to challenges, problems, where we've not achieved what we need to achieve. The third phase of the evolution of BEE has been the focus on black industrialists. The idea that instead of only focusing, or mainly focusing, on a percentage of shareholding in an existing company, is how do we support, assist, and inspire black South Africans to build their own companies, to start enterprises, or to buy enterprises, or to grow enterprises. And the idea of a black industrialist is not the same as the general BEE scheme. It's an idea where a black South African owns or controls an operation. And so that's now, over the last number of years, begun to get some traction. And as DG October says, so far, all of them are still in business. It's the nature of it. Some will fall. It's the nature of the market economy. You can't guarantee success. What we want to do with it is not say that every single one must be a success, but the bulk of them must be successes. And we must grow those businesses so they become, from medium-sized businesses, they become large businesses. And then there must always be open space to bring in more small businesses and more medium-sized businesses. But we're ready for a fourth area in the transformation of the concept of BEE. And it's one where we're looking much more to the empowerment of workers of a company. Because when you think about it, workers are the co-wealth creators. They're not from outside the company. They're intrinsically part of the company. And on a small scale, we've done some work on that in the past. But more significantly now, the Competition Amendment Act, which will come into effect during 2019, has a provision that essentially encourages worker ownership arrangements in mergers and acquisitions. In other words, in a merger, the competition authorities, among other things, look at whether employee share ownership, worker participation levels are increasing or not. Why that is important is when workers become co-shareholders, then the focus is on growing the business itself. Because you're not growing someone else's business, you're growing a business that you have an intrinsic stake in. So those are some ideas in the evolution of the policy around this. What we want to resist is complete revamp of policy every couple of years. It's to say, once you've got the policy framework broadly right, it's just implement better, improve implementation, and then you see the results, as opposed to every 2 years trying to change the policy. So this will be a big change, but then from there we want to bed it down and really make it work. On the question that was raised, also the comment by Honorable Tring on regulation, I think the focus that the Honorable Member puts not only on registering a business, but also an environment in which businesses are able to operate and grow is important. And that is certainly what we are going to be focusing on, because it's not simply bringing in more legal shells at our businesses, but it's creating an environment where those businesses thrive. Of course, society has to balance many different issues, but in dealing with all of our objectives, we must make sure that it's possible for businesses to grow, to become stronger, to become competitive, and to be big players in the global economy. We're now in a market that's not just the South African market. And very importantly, with us signing the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, we essentially have the African market as the area of focus for South African business. And that means we have to grow the business sector. If we don't, others will take the space and we'll see a significant rise in imports. And so I think those are all points well made. Honorable Cuthbert, I think most of the questions, that the specific questions that was asked were addressed, but perhaps a few I should just deal with briefly. I think I heard the Honorable Member talk about the fact that in quarter one this was a 3.2% decline in GDP, and Honorable Cuthbert was a bit concerned that we were not making that point in the presentation, that it was missing from the presentation. Now, I should make 2 points. The first point, it is there. It is on page 7 of the document, and it says there on page 7, after 2 quarters of growth, we experienced another slowdown with GDP decreasing by 3.2% in quarter 1, 2019. So obviously, if we look at the annual growth, the minute one quarter drops, then your annual rate declines. And if it goes long enough, then eventually your annual growth is in negative territory. But I think what we've done with this presentation is not focus so much on one quarter, because it's the start of an administration. So we wanted to give a little bit of a longer view of things. For quarterly presentations, we'll focus a lot more on both what's happened in that previous quarter and what's happened in the preceding 12 months, because those are quite useful indicators. I want to just build briefly on the comment by Dr. Tom, DG Tom, that the KPIs, when they deal with reports, in those reports, as he rightly pointed out, it often addresses jobs. But I should also say, in a number of cases, jobs are the outcomes of doing other things right. And what those reports deal with are the things that is within government's control. There's things government can do, but there are things that is required are required by the private sector. There's things that's required by labor. And so we would certainly, in a number of instances, try to remove the impediments to faster jobs growth. And those reports would then indicate all of those areas. And the Honourable Member will see as we go through the issues in from time to time in the committee what those deal with. Honourable McPherson, first thank you for the appreciated comments that you've made. And I welcome particularly the support, Honourable McPherson, for evidence-based policy. I think it's great because I think it's an area that we can build an enormous consensus in the committee, as well as the role of manufacturing as a key driver for jobs. The role of manufacturing is often underplayed and misunderstood. And in our embrace of new economies and new sectors, which are important, the significant role of manufacturing is not always recognized. Manufacturing jobs are not only the direct jobs of people in a factory, but those factories, those your manufacturing base, it spawns technology, it pulls in services, financial, legal, other services. It has a significant multiplier effect in the economy. It stimulates other activities. It pulls in raw material from farms and from mines and from forests and from the ocean. So the role of manufacturing can't be understated. It is it's very, very significant. And I really appreciate the fact. I think that's an area that all the parties in Parliament would have complete consensus on. The ACDP, the EFF, the DA, the ANC, all the parties, I think, would be in agreement on that issue. Honourable McPherson makes the point about the role of the DTI, and thank you for the comment there, I think, about the important role of the department. There's two points I'd like to make in prefacing the question of structural versus short-term responses. I think one of it is that I've been given an enormous advantage to build on the work of Rob Davies. He put an enormous amount of effort and passion into the portfolio and in a number of areas, I think, was able to make a significant difference. And I think building on that makes it easier for us all to achieve even more. And the second one is I have a great team that I can rely on, that we can deploy in pursuit of this new vision of a reimagined industrial strategy. And the focus, why we didn't use the word policy, and we use the strategy, the focus is on action, on implementation, not on endless debates about things, but getting things done. Because that's the mandate, that's the message all parliamentarians got from all parties during the election campaign. Get things done. Move on the issues. So we do recognize that we've got to deal with both structure and short-term challenges. The structural issues are complex and sometimes very difficult to resolve, but they've got to be resolved. And not all the structural issues are ones that everybody will agree with each other on. Let me give an example. One of the structural features of the South African economy is very high levels of economic concentration and ownership. Now, on the one hand, you need large companies. Large companies can give you economies of scale, which can bring down the price of products. Large companies can afford the research and development budgets that gives you innovation, new products. Large companies have got the wherewithal to get aggressively into the export market. Those are positives. On the other hand, when you have a very concentrated market and you keep out new players, you keep out young people, you keep out small businesses, there is very little incentive to be dynamic, to be competitive, to try to keep prices low, to try to bring new products into market. And therefore, the role of competition in opening up markets is critical. And a lot of our focus will be on trying to ensure that competition policy opens up markets, because that's a significant way of changing the structural dimension of the South African economy. So I've given one example. There are many. There are on areas of skills development, there are structural challenges with some degree of mismatch between the skills preferred and the skills needed. There are issues around infrastructure that access a constraint that we need to resolve. This is a low savings rate. There are many issues that would need to be dealt. Not all of them can fall directly within the purview of the DTI mandate and the EDD mandate, but what they can do is we can contribute constructively in resolving those issues. I think you're right in noticing our emphasis, Honorable McPherson, on partnerships with the private sector. Take any sector. Take car making, take clothing and textiles, take chemicals. Government doesn't build cars. Government doesn't make chemicals. Government doesn't stitch suits, although we hope all the members of parliament would wear locally made suits. Honorable McPherson's suit is locally made, but I notice a stunning silence from Honorable Cuthbert. So I hope I should not read more into that. But on a serious note, my suit is made by local hands, local workers in Salt River, and it's a great quality suit. So we're not only doing it because we want to create jobs, but also South African workers are great. But on a serious note, we've got to work closely with the private sector and help them to be the generators of jobs and growth in the economy. That doesn't mean that the state has no role. It doesn't seem to us, when we look at the international experience, that it's a matter of the state getting out of the way. It's the state being a smart state. If the state gets over-involved or get involved in the wrong areas, it can act as a brake to growth. If the state plays the right role, the state can be an enormous support for growth. And we can give many examples. Not only the examples of China, but also the examples of the United States. President Ramaphosa raised in his reply to the State of the Nation address, he spoke of the concept of an entrepreneurial state. And it's based on work, as he quoted, done by someone based on the U.S. economy. And it was a fascinating piece of work, because what it showed is that many of the technologies at the heart of American growth, take for example GPS, that drives not just my cell phone when I'm using Google Maps, but so many other apps on my phone, or touchscreen technology, or the internet itself. These were as a result of significant risks that was taken by the American state, by government, in research and development, in work that was done by the Defense Force, the American Defense Force, for example, that led to the platform of the Internet. So what American businesses do, they leverage off that. They build smart new ways in which those technologies can be commercialized, used, drive economies, create jobs, and so on. So the state has to ensure that it's an enabler. It makes it possible for things to happen. But a state that is just absent is also not a state that facilitates growth. A state that tries to take over the role of the private sector is not a state that's going to promote growth. It's to find that right balance that is the heart of smart industrial policy, which is what reimagining industrial strategy is about. That we're not going to be there making suits and making cars. We're there to help those who make suits and cars, to make those suits and cars, and we can do it by the environment we create. On the issue Honorable McPherson raised around the fight for industry, the fight for the job creators, I completely concur with that. And of course, industry and the job creators are both the investor community as well as the workers. They all are part of what drives our growth engines. And so we will be building partnerships with the two key social partners and supporting and facilitating partnerships between them themselves, because in a way business and labor are the most important players in the success of a workplace, much more in many cases than what we can do from the state side. So we've got to empower that things happen at the workplace. The rate of unemployment must be a big concern and consideration. What we wanted to show with these numbers, though, is not that we're doing brilliantly, because our unemployment rate is extraordinarily high. It's to show that South Africa has a very, very significant challenge, more than most other countries. Our challenge is not only the unemployment that was inherited. It's that as more people leave subsistence economies and come into the urban commercial economy, they increase the number of job seekers way beyond population growth or even working age population growth. So we need extraordinary interventions by the business community, by organized labor, by government, by all of us together, to try to facilitate the absorption of particularly young people in employment. The final area is on the notion that the only KPI for the DTI and its agency should be jobs. And I would say that jobs must be the principal driver of all of our work. It's not the only one, but it is above all the most important one. If we take SABS, for example, I would like the SABS to report to us on how its standards work is helping to support and create jobs. It's an important thing. But of course, the SABS also has the role to make sure that when I buy an electrical equipment and I put it on, that my house doesn't burn down, because they've got to have appropriate standards that they would then set for that, or the testing of a component. So in every entity in the DTI family, EDD family, we are going to ask them exactly that question, jobs, because it has to be the overriding drive of government. And if we resolve the jobs issue, we fight poverty, we fight inequality. They're not the only measures, I emphasize that, but they're the most important measure in fighting inequality and unemployment. The bills coming to the committee, we are reflecting on it. The easiest thing for an executive authority to do is to announce a series of bills. Very easy to do so. But what we're trying to do is to think a bit more smartly. What are the bills that are really necessary and appropriate to complete in the new administration? And I think as soon as we feel we've got the right list of bills, then we'd want to share that immediately with Parliament, so that Parliament would have a longer view, even if we're not going to introduce them immediately. But once we say, look, we want to do something on that, we've got to take the honourable members in our confidence, because it gives you a sense of the roadmap. And I do take the point that it would be desirable to do the legislative changes as early as is possible, and to do it yet in such a way that we don't have a rushed job of a poorly conceived bill because we're rushing to get the bill quickly on the table, or that it comes so late in the day that we rush to get it off the table. So it's to find the right balance that once I think we have confidence, we should table the bill or set of bill titles and at least inform the committee that we're doing work on it. So I hope that covers the questions. I'm sure that there's more detail sitting behind those questions that in the fullness of time the committee will be wanting us to provide. But that is our response to the questions, Honourable Chair.
I did feel quite welcomed to Cape Town when I arrived the past week, particularly when I got this big Mara City kiss on my lips, because I had nice blisters because I wasn't feeling well. She's a strong woman. I'm sure the weather actually confirms that. So can I actually maybe make a suggestion? Minister, you said you would be able to tell us about your team in terms of what they do. I thought because it's the first meeting, I'd like to hear everyone's voice so that they introduce themselves, the entire team. And then I ask that for the opportunity that we then take the opportunity for you to just tell us what they do. And then we'll see what time we have, and then we can actually then try and round up issues with members. Because I'm just worried that if ever we continue the engagement, we might miss, it's a first meeting, and it's quite important that we are able to actually have an opportunity to know who's here. It's very strategic and it's very important. So I would suggest that, but I see the hand. Can I actually take you, McPherson?
Sorry, Chair, there were some unanswered questions. I had specifically asked the Minister with respect to picking up the sugar problem that had been left by the previous Minister and what he plans to do on that. I didn't get an answer.
Was it on the legislation?
No, it wasn't.
It's a different issue.
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
Is it
still on the unanswered questions? Okay, let me hear you.
Thank you very much, Chair. It was just one question, one comment, and it was regarding the amount allocated for incentives and why there was such a sharp decrease from 2016-2017 financial year onwards, directed at DG October. And then just a comment regarding the indicators. Maybe the comment that I was trying to make was misinterpreted, but what I was trying to say is I understand that there may be reports that contain information regarding jobs. However, in order to make it more outcomes-based, I suggested that that KPI, and particularly the outcome within that monitoring and evaluation template, be directly linked to jobs.
Questions are not answered. Can I just say, I see a new hand, but I am making just a suggestion as well. If I can come back to you, Minister, I'm sure it won't take too long. If I can actually allow that, then I'll take your hand and I'll take your hand.
I hear what Honourable McPherson is asking the Minister to respond to, but I would request. I'm also interested in the matter that is raised, but I would humbly request that we don't ambush that Minister, and maybe when they come back again, include that report and the update to the committee chair. It's just a humble request.
I think, Minister, the committee agrees that what I propose to you, we do immediately. So can we actually ask the key teams to introduce themselves, and then can we actually then get the Minister just to speak to what the team does, and then can I actually then conclude with the issues which have been raised? And, Minister, I'm sure there was a discussion of members about a particular issue, you'll decide how you want to deal with it.
So perhaps we should start, may I suggest, Chair, we start with the person super next to Deputy Minister Gina.
Thank you, Minister. Honourable members, my name is Sipho Sigote. I'm responsible for Special Economic Zones and Economic Transformation Division within the DTI. Thank you.
Hi, it's Musa Ibrahim. I'm the Chief of Staff in the Minister's Office. Thank you.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Irsha Katrada. I'm the Minister's Special Advisor.
I'm Tanya van Mierlis. I'm the Chief Economist from the Economic Development Department.
Good afternoon, Honourable Members. I'm Irene Ramafola, the Chief Financial Officer of the Economic Development. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Honourable Members. My name is Shabir Khan, and I'm the Chief Financial Officer at the DTI.
Good afternoon, Honourable Members. My name is Lerato Mataboga. I'm responsible for the division called Trade Investment South Africa, and we're responsible for exports and outward investments.
Good afternoon, honorable members. My name is Malebo Mabije Thompson. I'm responsible for the industrial financing division, and I think members who've been in the committee for some time would have known it as the incentive administration division.
Afternoon, honorable members. Jody Scholtz, group chief operating officer at the DTI, primarily responsible for public entity oversight and all of the compliance reporting. Also one of the administrators of the Bureau of Standards. Thank you.
Afternoon, honorable members. I'm Dr. Evelyn Masoja, responsible for the Consumer and Corporate Regulation Division in the DTI.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And I think the team not only introduced their names, but they made me redundant, which is always a good thing. And they've given, a little snippet of what they do. Chair, on the question by Honourable McPherson on sugar, I did refer to this matter very briefly in the SONA debate to indicate that we are looking at the matter. And just by way of perhaps some of the newer members of the committee and newer members in Parliament, the brief and incomplete history of it is roughly as follows. That over a number of years, South Africa's sugar industry faced enormous pressure from imports, with sugar from Brazil and many other countries coming into the South African market. We have a tariff regime in place that is a formula. The sugar farmers then approached government. We are now in 2019, this would have been in about 2017 DGs, and said that they were bleeding. We convened, Minister Rob Davies and I convened a meeting with all the sugar farmers, small and large, the mills, as well as the end users of sugar. Such as the beverage industry, the food processing industry, and some retailers selling sugar. And we heard all the parties out, and we asked ITAC to expedite a review of the sugar tariff. ITAC then asked all the parties to give evidence, provide information, financial information, job information, pricing, and so on. And based on that, ITAC then made a recommendation. The recommendation was for an increase in tariffs, not to the extent that the industry requested, but higher than what the end users wanted. In the course of that investigation, it also became evident that there was a period when there was a gap in our regulatory arrangements and that sugar had flooded in during that period. We now have heard from sugar farmers that the challenge is that whilst there's been an increase in the tariff, they still have enormous challenges on their margins, leading to job losses and potential closures. Now, the complexity of this issue is as follows. On the one hand, government has enormous understanding of the challenge of farmers. Many of these are small-scale farmers, black South Africans eking out a living, in a number of cases, large farms that have invested significantly over the years, and we need to ensure that we maintain and grow our agricultural sector. On the other hand, sugar is an input into the agro-processing industry. Honorable members may not realize it, but we don't only a very significant part of our sugar doesn't only go to the supermarkets. A lot of food companies use sugar in huge quantities. And so a lot of processed food, a portion of it is sugar. When the sugar price goes up, that means a price increase also in those processed foods. And in the case of the beverage industry, they use, of course, certain beverages, not this one, but the colored ones, use a lot of sugar. And the sugar beverage industry, or the beverage industry, told us that if the price of sugar went up, as well as the sugar levy that was introduced by Treasury, the danger is that it becomes uneconomical to sell their products. And what we've seen now is, it appears to be, I say appears to be because we want to look at the evidence more carefully, but it appears to be that there's a fall off in demand for sugar. In some cases, like with the beverage industry, they've now moved to sugar-free or lower sugar products because the pricing pressure is enormous. So our job is to try to support both parts of this value chain. And so we are now looking at all the facts, and then we will launch an appropriate initiative to try to see what is a better long-term strategy for a sustainable sugar industry. So I'm not spelling out now, obviously, the steps. Honorable McPherson, I appreciate the question. It's a fair question. But I think as Honorable Mantash may have sought to anticipate, which I appreciate, we just need a little bit of time to make sure that when we do our interventions that they're well thought through. And that's what we're thinking about now. But the concern around sugar farmers is one that we too share. We recognize it's very important, and that's why we asked ITAC previously to expedite their investigation. And they did it in quite a short time, much faster than is normally done by regulators. This is now the tariff increase, the last tariff increase. What we're now looking at, for example, is what is domestic demand for sugar? How do we get the demand levels to be higher? Are there alternative products that utilize the sugar other than the food value chain? So there's a few, each of them have their own complexities and trade-offs that would need to be carefully considered. And so that's where the work has moved to. On the incentives issue, I forgot to make an important point, which I think I've been reminded by the comment, I think it was by Honorable Cuthbert. And that is what strikes me across the benches here. Not everybody has spoken, but I could see with the body language, is that I have a united team that side that feels the DTI EDD budgets should be increased. That for me is music to our ears. And not the budgets for staff and overheads, the budgets that go to the support to rebuild industry. And that is smart support that ensures we have small businesses, medium-sized businesses. We even strengthen our large businesses and make them export more. I think that's great. And obviously, all of your support, public and vocal, is always appreciated on this front. The Minister of Finance has a very difficult balancing job. And in that balancing job, he has to make sure that resources go to growth, that it goes to social development, and that we balance the books, that we don't run unsustainable debt levels. And so he has a difficult job, and in the one corner I am arguing very strongly in my conversation internally that investment in growing the economy is smart investment. That if more of the budget was for investment spending and less for consumption spending, we derive the benefit over time in a bigger economy and therefore a bigger fiscal take. And so when you're constrained, you can't cut yourself into growth. You've got to shift yourself into growth by putting more resources into investment spending by the state. And state investment spending are not only but principally in two areas. Number one, infrastructure. That's the fundamental role of the state in promoting growth and counter-cyclical economic policies. And the other one is in industrial incentives and support. Those are the two drivers of investment. The one is counted as direct investment. The other one unlocks private investment. They both are key drivers. So I'm happy with the result, and I hope all the party leaders share the views of the representatives. I'm sure that is the case. So if all of those party leaders strongly raise the issues in Parliament, I think we all will hear them on this matter. On the KPIs, I think the point made by Honourable Cuthbert is one that bears some thinking through, and I will certainly give it consideration. I think some of the challenges, and just to throw an idea, we're not exhausting the discussion now, is what KPIs have become is they've become something that is now audited and tick-boxed. And so departments want to comply with the language of a KPI. And the Auditor General wants to see the department comply with the language of a KPI. Some years ago was a classic example. We had, it was in the Economic Development Department, we reached an agreement with Coca-Cola in a merger matter that made available 800 million rand to small businesses, small-scale farming, township enterprises. It said the headquarters of Coca-Cola Africa would be in South Africa. It guaranteed the jobs of workers for what eventually became a five-year period. It accepted no jobs must be lost among blue-collar workers as a result of the merger indefinitely. It agreed that the Appetizer brand would continue to be produced in South Africa and exported globally. It had many other elements like that. It agreed to localize the ingredients in Appetizer, some were being imported. It agreed packaging must be local. And when we put that up in our reports, the Auditor General said, but hang on, that's not technically in your KPI. So I think what the departments have done is they've tried therefore to say, if the Auditor General is obliged to only audit the letter of a KPI, then write the letter of the KPI such that it is capable of being achieved. So if we take jobs, aggregate jobs in an economy, for example, that's a function of so many things. If the global economy tanks, many of the numbers we put up are not going to be achieved. If the global economy grows more robustly, we'll have an easier job. If we succeed, for example, in what we want to do, but energy prices are too high, or there's downtime on energy, we're not going to achieve our things. So we've taken all of that into account to make it auditable, to say that we must be accountable, but we must be accountable in a way that an Auditor General can also say there is compliance. Is it the smartest system? Not in my view. In my view, it's too compliance-driven and not driven enough by what is called the entrepreneurial state, the ability to get things done and look at the impact rather than simple pro forma compliance. But that's the system we're in, and within that we now have to operate. That's what the law requires while we review this. So we are trying to think of a smarter way. DG October, for example, has been quite a champion inside government, inside from the officials, about trying to find a new way of measuring and a new way of doing things. So I think that I share, I think, the sentiment, but I have to make sure that the KPIs are also auditable. And an Auditor General doesn't say, well, okay, this is what happened to the U.S. economy. We'll still tick you, even though all they'll say is non-compliance. And so that's, I think, the challenge, that we can only measure that which is under our control. And then we must be held accountable. If it was within your control, why didn't you do it? And that, I think, is part of the discussion about SMART, a reformulation into SMART indicators. But we'll do some reflection. We'll take into account the thoughts that you've raised today. Back to you, Chairperson.
Minister, I think we do agree that asking questions will be allowed in the committee about anything that members would like to talk to you about. But I think what one may have to raise is that we still have to get our house in order. Obviously, we coming through now, we do have the legacy reports, economic development, the DTI circulated, everyone has got that. I think the issue raised, the sugar matter raised by members
it's part of what is outstanding as part of issues captured in the legacy report. So we have quite a sizable kind of issues that we have to look at. So obviously we'll need to actually work out a plan and a program as a committee on how we're going to manage that process. But I think to the minister and the department, it is actually quite important that we do work together to make sure that we don't lose time, because if ever we don't plan in good time and actually agree on what we prioritize and what implementation would be, we might lose a lot of time just picking up what actually might be seen as urgent or might be urgent, but the reality is that we've got a full plate. When you look at the legacy reports and the kind of issues that are coming out, we'll need to plan and prioritize and actually get full support of the department and ministry and be able to actually implement and get the work going. There's a meeting which you're going to have. I'm just saying today is not the last meeting. It's the first meeting, in fact. Because it's the first meeting, next week it's the 9th. We are meeting 10th to 11:30. We're going to be consideration of the draft budget vote report. And on the same day, 11:30 to 1:30, we're looking at the induction by the DTI, Industrial Development Division, covering roles of entities in relation to industrial development, ITEC, Competition Commission, IDC, SANAS, NISA, and SABS, and incentives. So I think one is actually looking forward to that discussion and engagement. In the same week, on the 11th, at the National Assembly, 18 hours 30 to 2015, we'll be having the debate of both vote 25 and 34. So we still have a bit of issues that we need to deal with. So on my part, I'm just thinking that maybe for today, in terms of what we have done and the planning moving forward, we'll need to actually look at everything that we need to deal with, taking account of timelines, which is actually procedure in terms of Parliament, because we need to actually comply with certain things. So maybe, Minister, the thing we may have to work on a bit is just to make sure that in the sharing of information, in the communication, we try and actually close that gap tightly so that good information goes out in time. We're able to actually share, look at what's actually happening so that members can be able to read through, be able to comment, so that when we come back to our meetings, we don't take a lot of time in the debate and discussion or clarity questions. So I think maybe that will be the point. It's just a suggestion on my part, because I think today's meeting gives an opportunity of sense of what is required for the committee to do. And obviously, I think it's the correct time for us to look at what is it that we planning to do and how do we prioritize and implement as a committee. I did note a hand of the member at the back. Okay. Mulder. And then Yako. And then we'll take Mbuyane. And then we'll come to you, McPherson, in that order.
Honorable Chair, thank you. Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, just at this late stage, also allow me on behalf of the Freedom Front Plus to congratulate you and your team and all of the best for the new term. This is a question about yesterday that has an effect on today and impact on tomorrow. And I have to ask it, but I will be short. It's common knowledge that state capture, as we all know it, poor governments and corruption impeded on the DTI's efforts to re-industrialize the economy. And also, other thing that also, or factor that also impacted on it, is the lack of cohesion across government. So what I want to ask is, what is the ability of the department to perform proper proper oversight during this crucial term? This might be the most crucial term, the sixth parliament since 1994. It's like we say in Afrikaans, a mark of break situation, make or break. So I really want to know that, because I don't see much mention of it in the documents, that the situation has actually impacted very negatively on all the possibilities for economic growth. So I have to ask, what measures have the department taken to step up the oversight performance? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to say welcome to the Minister and your team. I'm very new in the committee, but I'd like to know something I didn't hear about. In terms of the rural economy, is there any plans that you have to stimulate, especially young and emerging businesses in that sector, especially looking at the Eastern Cape and Limpopo, in light of the decline in the predominantly very big industries in those provinces, like agriculture, and in your mining, your mines that have gone under? Is there any plan that you have with your department to see that you revive those economies and those and support those young businesses there?
Thank you very much, Chair. I think mine was on the clarity and also acknowledge the presentation. I heard the minister talking of automotive industry. I just wanted to check in terms of the status and the update from the report of 2019 November. What is the progress report in terms of the automotive industry? One also would like to welcome the budget of the triple BEE, so that they can be able at least to do monitoring and be able to put some measures. And also want to check whether, because some of our SOEs and departments are not compliant with the Triple B Act. So I wanted to check what is the strategy, the turnaround strategy of our government and also the private sector to can deal with the monitoring of Triple B and those that are not compliant with the Act. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks. I just wanted to ask, Chair, if we can try and get that draft budget report emailed by Monday, just so we can, you know, start going through it on Monday and start submitting comments. If we're just going to follow the same process as we did in the last committee by sending comments through to the Secretariat, if you could just give some guidance as to how you want to deal with that process. No, about the committee budget. Yeah, the committee budget report.
Thank you very much, honourable members, and honourable Mulder. Thank you for the kind words to Deputy Minister Gina, myself, and I'm sure also to Deputy Minister Majola, and we will convey that. You raise an important point, honourable member, around the effects of state capture on economic performance. And about 2 years ago, maybe a bit more than 2 years ago, we conducted a study where we looked at the effects of corruption in infrastructure on economic performance. And because corruption is not something that you know the full extent of until you investigate, where to do a modeling, an economic modeling exercise, and on an assumption of a 10% overpayment on infrastructure bills as a result of corruption and state capture, we calculated then that the impact of that was a loss to the GDP of some 27 billion rand a year, not once off but per year, with a loss, or certainly with the loss of some 76,000 jobs that would otherwise be created. So the first part of asked the question, which is there a relationship? Yes, there is a relationship, and it's a negative relationship. Second part is, what are we doing about it? And there are a range of interventions. Obviously, there are the broader issues around the Zondo Commission and the other commissions, which are critical, and all the actions that will follow from there. But there's also things that's directly in the control of the departments. So in the previous period, as we've been looking back, both the DTI and the EDD have been making a lot more information available because transparency helps. So the IDC, for example, now publishes on its website the names of all of the beneficiaries of IDC loans. Normally you wouldn't do that because they're a bank and bank client information is confidential. But we felt, given the challenges externally, we needed to step out of traditional decisions and do things differently so that we have an opportunity to fix the problem of corruption and state capture and so on. Now, the other part of it is effective oversight over entities. And DG October made a good point earlier where he said, starting, I guess some 10 years ago, DG, there was a number of public entities that had either audit problems or sometimes perhaps even disclaimers. And just working institution by institution to clean it up has contributed to fewer entities with that problem. And our goal must be zero, that all entities get a unqualified audit. These things, by their nature, is not once off, you clean it up and you walk away. It's constant. You've got to just keep your eye on it. It's human beings we're dealing with. And every time there's a slippage, we've got to be prepared to show we will take action. We can't guarantee there won't be slippages. What we can guarantee is that we'll act on them. Because if people see there are consequences to wrongdoing, that will eventually dry up the wrongdoing. As long as there's no consequences, then it will continue, irrespective of the speeches we make. It's when there's consequences, when you take action, when you fire people, when they're prosecuted, those are the times when you begin to change the mindset that relies on corruption and capturing of state institutions. So we're now looking at, there will be a report that will come to Parliament on the work on the oversight of entities, and perhaps honourable members can then, when that report come up, evaluate whether we're robust and strong enough. And if you have suggestions and ideas, our job is to hear parliamentarians out and then to consider those carefully. So we'll always be open-minded to constructive ideas and suggestions, because you can never say you've won the fight. You can say you're winning the fight because it's an ongoing fight, always. In every country in the world, it's vigilance has to be eternal and constant to keep the books of account clean. And so I hope as we share with the committee what we are doing, the committee will see the actions that underlie it, and can then evaluate, is it enough? Should we be doing more? And then offer us advice and guidance on these things. Thank you very much, Honorable Yaku, for your question, and appreciate the focus. You put an important focus on not only rural areas, but also young people. Now, there are some things that the department is doing, and both DGs will be able in detail in future meetings of the committee to elaborate on that, but just perhaps to sketch and headline a little bit. One of the areas we're focusing on now is industrial parks and special economic zones. And the whole spatial transformation, which includes township and village enterprises. They include business centers and digital hubs. Now that package of interventions, which is not only of the DTI, we'll do it with sister departments also, that's intended to address the challenge that you rightly raise. I remember what a thriving manufacturing-based Timbaza used to be, or Tua, or Kotzabelo, O Mokwasi at its heydays, O Babelechi. Some of them still have an industrial footprint. Some have completely disappeared. And we are now looking, we've got a program located inside the DTI that will focus on 15 industrial parks or industrial districts, where we're just going to help. Obviously, we don't have the budget to fix all of it, but at least to help with basic infrastructure, to make sure that the places have electricity, water, that you have a fence around it, that you maintain the buildings, that you do those basic things that enable smaller businesses, medium-sized businesses to locate there. The concept of digital hubs, which we're still putting the finishing touches to, and it's something that I think we're quite enthusiastic about, and we hope we can get more budget for it, is to provide opportunities where young people get exposed to ICT. And by the way, not just young people in urban areas. I visited a school opening in the Eastern Cape, not very far from Hole in the Wall. Very, very rural area. Gravel road, 4 kilometers. And there were young children there. It was a new school. And it was the day when the school was opened. And we saw the eyes of the young child when the child can press against an iPad. And you can see the potential to just take young people in rural areas and bring them into the modern 21st century economy and use their skills and their enterprise. So we've got to do that. It's not just a targeted thing to assist the rural poor. It's also to assist the overall economy, because growth must come from bringing more South Africans into the economy. So we're on to that area. We hope we can do even more than what is in our budget. We're not happy with what's in our budget. We're still making the argument for more. We'll be working with the Small Business Development Department also. They're also focusing on this. We're going to work with the Department of Communication. They also focus on the digital economy. So there'll be a few departments working together. And we hope we can keep pressure in this area on the special economic zones, the industrial parks, the digital hubs, and so on. On Honorable Mbuyani's questions, on the auto sector, essentially we're now working on the implementation modalities around the next phase of the master plan. That's very critical. That's going to lay the basis for deeper local components. Because what the first phase of the auto sector was, perhaps let me just go back a little bit and just make sure that, we still have a few minutes, Chair. So when, in 1994, with the transformation to democracy, the auto sector we inherited was large, but very inefficient. They were built behind very high protection, and the cost of motor vehicles compared to elsewhere in the world was extremely high. And so not as many people could afford cars. Many people who have the kind of gray hair that I have will remember those days and the bigger chunk of budgets that often went into this. The concern was, as soon as you open your economy, as we were required to do as part of the World Trade Organization commitments, then we were going to lose our auto sector. It would be decimated. So we developed an auto sector where the first phase was to just consolidate it. And so the agreement that was reached between the DTI and the industry in 1995 or thereabouts was to have fewer models. Don't make so many different models, but you make many more cars of each model. So you can bring the price of each car down. You basically have economies of scale. And that helped to save the industry. Many other parts of the world, the industry disappeared. Our industry held its own. The next phase was to say, let's bring in more component manufacturing. And so we tweaked the rules, and we've brought in more component manufacturers now. For every one job that we have in the assembly of a car, there's probably about two jobs in making the components that go into that assembly. The third phase we looked at is bringing more black South Africans into making those components. That we not only have a local one, but we have a local one that draws in the full range of South African skills, including the skills of black South Africans as business owners, as entrepreneurs, and so on. And we're now looking at significantly upping the localization. At the moment, it's about DG about 39%, and we're seeking to increase it to about 60%. So over the next number of years, it's a process to get there. We will be increasing the level of local components, and this is by agreement with the industry. We're now looking also at, can we encourage automakers to bring some innovation into the motor making sector? For example, our agenda for the future will have to look at either hybrids or electric vehicles, autonomous cars, these are the driverless vehicles, basically to make sure that we're always making cars for which there is a demand. Our role is to create jobs and industrial capacity to industrialize our economy. And so we've got to make the things that consumers want and that they're going to buy. And so that's where a big part of our focus will be. And then we'll do periodic updates on these areas. On the BBBEE, the monitoring of it, there is a commission that does work. I will be briefed in due course on where the commission is with the level of work that it's doing. We do look at public entities also from time to time. They're under pressure from their own boards to do these things. And it is an important area of focus that we've got to get right, because the buying power of the state, if used smartly, can really help to ensure that we create a broad base of development in South Africa. I don't know, DGs, if either of you would like to add anything to this. Covered? Deputy Minister, anything you'd like to add? Chair, back to you.
So I'm sure you would accept, Minister, there's no wrong question. Yeah, so we would actually ask questions, and you'll continue doing what you're doing right now. So can I just ask you to be the last hand so that we can be able to then close?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, again, in my reading last night on some of the papers that were given to us, there were commissions, colloquialisms, whatever it is, all right. That had been set out, was it last term? And the one was on, what was that? It was on, beneficiation. So beneficiation is so key to growing the economy. And I haven't heard much in any of the presentations on beneficiation. So what is the department's role in and the progress with regards to ensuring that beneficiation is fast-tracked? Thank you, Jim.
I think we would be in order to release Minister and the A-team, because I think we need to just have an announcement by the committee secretary on the processes of issues that we need to be looking at for the committee. So maybe if you allow me, I can actually conclude the meeting now. There's our meeting agenda, so I adjourn the meeting. So unless there's any other thing you'd like to say, Minister. Yes.
Chair, through you, I'll keep it short, but if I could just briefly respond to Honourable Tring's question on beneficiation. First, by promising that this will be an area that we will from time to time come to the committee. It's quite a central part of our thinking. It's a matter that we're already doing quite a bit of work on as the departments. For example, in supporting the development of new battery technology. technologies that use South African inputs, for example, in promoting the manufacture of steel locally that uses South African iron ore. For example, there's a special measure that we've introduced as part of the International Trade Administration Act to promote the use of local scrap metal in foundries and steel mini mills. One of those steel mini mills or foundries is based here in Cape Town, Cisco Steel. Another one in the Eastern Cape, Agni Steel. For example, the past support around the use of platinum in catalytic converters and the present pilot projects around fuel cell technologies. These are just a few examples. For example, the support for the smelting project that we hope can, with time, come into place around manganese so that the ferromanganese industry can use more locally made product. And of course, aside from all of those initiatives, and there are others like that, there's also, in a way, the other program of the department, which we call agro-processing, is, if you like, the beneficiation of farming products. And the furniture promotion is the beneficiation of forestry products. So it's across a wide range that we have programs. We're arguing to see how can we enhance it, how can we make it stronger, how can we build on the successes of what works. So each of these areas will be areas that from time to time over the next number of years we're going to put the spotlight on and see what can we do better, smarter, with stronger partnerships with the private sector, working closely with labor to just grow these different sectors. There are challenges. In future sessions, we'll raise those challenges. They're not as easy as ministers simply dictating that it must happen, because getting through the technical challenges is what makes it happen, and that's where it's going to require smart implementation. But the short answer is, sitting under a lot of the presentation and the APP is, in fact, the preoccupation by government with trying to get greater levels of beneficiation. Thank you very much.
I thought you'll talk colloquium, because you said colloquium.
Yes.
Any sense of where that links up? Because the question did pick up a bit on that.
Yes. So the colloquia that colloquium singular, colloquia plural. The colloquia that we hold from time to time are, you can call them like round tables, where we bring together various people with knowledge and expertise. Often investors or inventors or public officials or academics. In fact, the origin of the word colloquium is, it's typically a gathering of academics to discuss a given topic. So we've now taken that concept and turned it into the words we use when we bring a think tank of people together. So that's the thing. I'm not aware of the specific colloquium that was held, but if it dealt with beneficiation, my reply then is on the substance of that matter. We've held a couple other colloquia, and be very happy in future to report on the outcomes of those colloquia. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Chief. Thank you, Minister, and the A team. We would actually release the team, and when you're gone, we'll adjourn the meeting. Okay, thank you very much.
just with regard to the budget with process and reports, as asked by Mr. McPherson, the intention is to distribute a draft report on Monday afternoon to members, with a request that members forward their comments for us by Tuesday morning, so that we can incorporate those comments when we meet on Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock. Those comments we would have captured in the committee, and we will indicate each party who has commented on and which comments, and the committee will then deliberate on those comments and hopefully conclude the discussion on that. We will affect those changes on Tuesday afternoon and then present a clean document on Wednesday morning for the committee to consider. You will see we distributed the program. There's been slight changes to the program, nothing significant. What we added on the program was indicating the mini plenaries relating to the economic cluster associated with trade and industry, nothing else. So you will know that the mini plenaries is related to the economic cluster, which falls under trade industry. At the back, you will see those clusters are there. The only change to the program, possibly is not confirmed, is in the last parliament there was a move towards doing away with paper, and we need to look at implementing that. We haven't in consultation with the division that deals with the connectivity to Uvumba and Bungeni. So we haven't finalized that. It may happen on Wednesday, but we will confirm by Tuesday. We will confirm that. So we will take. I hope all members have received their laptops and their iPhones and stuff like that, so that we can then deal with that on Wednesday if they are available. But that's the only. And the addition to the program is we will on the 24th get a briefing from the secretariat on the legacy reports of both EDD and TTI, and obviously by that time we will have a more detailed program also for going to the next quarter as well for the committee's consideration.
Thank you very much. I think that was mainly what I thought we should do, and can we see you back on Tuesday, I think? Yeah, thank you very much. How's the meeting is a chance?
Do you have a list of the books? What's your book?